Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, Jay, David, and Vicki will discuss all things forages. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Vicki looks like one of these high school students over there with her phone in her
hand. Get off your darn phone.
I was trying to look up that PD date that we was just talking about before we started recording.
Well, now, you looked it up in your calendar.
I know
that's probably right.
It could be, but, you know, we had different dates, so I was going to try to confirm.
It's always good to have it written down one place, Vicki, and not have to worry about that phone, because that phone
I have it written down. I have it written down in my calendar. He was the one who said it was a different time.
Well, now, I've not even looked at my calendar, so I don't. We're going to go by yours.
we might miss it altogether.
That wouldn't be the end of the world, for sure.
Not in November.
No.
For me, I got a bunch of stuff going on
in
November.
Absolutely. North American will be going on in November.
Hey, that's what I'm. I might ought to be doing that.
Yeah.
I don't know. If I go back, they may want to keep me. I told them last year I wasn't coming back.
So. Right. I enjoy it. That's a good deal. I enjoy the hog show part of it.
I always did enjoy it. It was one of those things that I used to look forward to every year.
Yeah.
And now I'm just. That's a pretty grueling schedule. The dairy show up there is 7 days long.
Yes.
And it's almost twice as long as the state fair.
The North American's a different deal, but since my daughter now works up there at the Kentucky venues, it's a good time for me to go see her. I'm not going
to
fuss too much.
I would like to go
get up there all I could if I was you.
Yep,
I'd like to go be a spectator. I don't know that I want to go sign up to work.
We may pick a day and you and me, some other agents, ride up there and go to the North American Dairy Show if you want.
Yeah.
Just so you can see and compare it to the State Fair. You help out at the State Fair Dairy Show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the State Fair Show on steroids.
Yeah.
It's huge.
It's still like watching paint dry. Yes.
Yeah.
What, the North American in general or the Dairy
Show?
No,
the Dairy Show is like watching paint dry.
It's
my speed, though. For,
is it now?
It's my speed for...
I like a little more action.
Now, if I'm watching, that may be a different story. If I'm working it,
you know, I understand your point of view. Yes,
yeah.
I do.
So
it's a good time. Any livestock show to me is a good time for folks to get around and visit and see people that they've shown with for a lot of years and visit old friends. And, you know, if you get around to some of these other venues across the country... We have pretty nice digs at the Kentucky Fair and Exposition Center.
Absolutely, You won't find any place that's heated and cooled like it is in Louisville.
Yeah.
And it is pronounced Louisville for those folks that are listening.
Louisville.
Yeah, it's not Louisville, and I don't know who came up with that, but that is not how you say that. It's not how people in Kentucky say it. I'll put it that way. So it is Louisville.
We are sure you are not from Kentucky if you don't say Louisville.
That's right. As soon as you say Louisville, like, where are you from?
Where are you from?
Yeah. So,
that's
but
right.
Anyway.
But we do. We have a super nice venue up there for all types of events, especially for livestock shows. But our state fair probably rivals a lot of state fairs when it comes to not only to me, the fair attractions are the livestock shows, the exhibits, the things that folks come in and bring their hard work they want to show off from for all year. And, you know, there's carnivals and all that to go along with it. But to me, the fair is the livestock shows and the exhibits.
Oh, absolutely. And showing on the green shavings is a privilege that a lot of folks don't get to do. And so when you do have the opportunity to do that, that's a big deal.
I will say that, as we've said many times, I'm not the livestock person, and I didn't grow up showing livestock or anything of that nature. And when I had the opportunity to join the dairy show last year as far as my state fair assignment, I was excited about it. I wanted to learn more about it because that's just something that I've never done. Obviously, my kids didn't do that. But I really enjoyed the process. I enjoyed just seeing the kids interact. And not kids. I mean, that's a family affair. I think that was the thing that when when you look out in the barn area, it's a family affair, and I think that's really something that's important to families to do things yeah. together. And you know,
I think that holds true with all the livestock sure. projects. You know, all
absolutely
all the way through the swine and the sheep and
absolutely.
The goats and horse showing, and it is all of it is a family affair. Anytime you talk about youth livestock showing, regardless of what the species is, it's a good thing. It teaches kids lots and lots of great qualities.
It does.
And hard work is one of them, you know, and responsibility is another, something that a lot of times a lot of kids don't have these days. And to be mm-hmm. quite honest with you, you learn a little bit of common sense mm-hmm. by being around some of these shows and being around some other people mm-hmm. that do have common sense. And so I think it's very important for those kids to be around other people and to be in these livestock projects. It teaches them so much.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, rabbits and poultry and all the different, you know, I didn't want to exclude them, but those are all great projects for everybody.
Absolutely, David. You mentioned the green shavings there. That's been a long standing tradition there at the Kentucky Fair and Exposition Center, both for our state fair and the North American mm-hmm. shows. Want to mention real quick my good friend Tim Reynolds, who's with Cox's Shavings there in Campbellsville, Kentucky. They're the provider of those shavings,
mm-hmm.
yeah. not only there to the state fair, but also to a lot of shows along the way.
Sure.
A lot of these competitors are using their products and carrying around across the state as they go and show, and I know they're a huge, huge supporter of yep. youth livestock shows.
There's no telling how much money I spent on Cox Shavings when we were showing pigs. So, yeah. You know, I'm glad they provide such a great product. I'm glad it's from here in Kentucky.
Yeah, sure. They're a subsidiary of Cox Interior Incorporated, who my mother worked for a lot of years, my brother too, and what a long-standing, very strong company there in the central mm-hmm. part of the state. They did a lot of business, a lot of areas, and employed yep. a lot of Kentuckians through the years.
It's great.
So we're all together today. We're going to talk a little all things forages, and we may bounce around from topic to topic, make swing back around, as they say, and circle back.
Yeah.
That's right.
Let's circle back.
That's a political saying, isn't it? Circle back.
I think so. They adopted it, but circling back's been something.
They didn't create.
I think it's an old livestock term. You know, you got to circle back to whoever's riding drag, make sure they're keeping things up.
Something like that.
The swing man does that. He's the one that circles back. So,
in other words, we may jump around on our topics today. Yep. What we're talking about, right?
In Vicky's brain today, jumping around. So.
That's right.
It's always good for somebody to be in my brain for a little
while. That's
what my
wife says. Yeah. She said, you just need to be in my brain for a day.
Yeah.
I said, no, I don't.
It would wear you out.
I do not want my wife in my brain.
Oh, goodness.
Yep. But we're going to talk all things forages, and I think, you know, we're at that time of the year right now where we're recording this in late July. This will probably air sometime on into August, probably about the second or third week of August. But that's a time where folks need to be thinking about pasture renovation. They need to be thinking about stockpiling some fescue if that's what they want to do, or any other preparations that they need to be making for fall and winter grazing. And I'm really looking forward to this year, folks being able to do some of that. We were so dry last fall in the mm-hmm. fall of 22 that stockpiling, you know, you got a little bit of a bump just by pulling some animals off of some mm-hmm. grass, but we weren't really able to separate any.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have the moisture to do any fall fertilization to try to ramp up those forage production in September and October. But David, if you're thinking right now as a cattleman, what are some of the things that you're thinking about preparing for right now when it comes to stockpiling fescue?
Well, I'm trying to think about the fields that I actually want to stockpile. You know, there's not every field on your farm that probably needs to be. A great option to that is a field that does have lower fertility, maybe thinking about doing some bale grazing in those fields. Later on this fall, you could do that. But mostly I'm thinking about, you know, we're checking fertilizer prices, see where we're at on prices. And obviously I'm watching the forecast and looking to see, you know, are we going to have some rain? You know, I have put out fertilizer, and this is no joke, and it rained. It couldn't have rained any better, and it turned off dry. I didn't get any good out of the fertilizer at all, so you know, I'm thinking about whether I want to spend that money or not to purchase that urea. And of course, in my area, we don't have a lot of ammonium nitrate, but we do have urea, which we obviously had to put treatment on. And, you know, so I'm looking to see how much that's going to be and trying to figure and put a pencil to it and see if that's going to be economically feasible for me to do. Cattle prices are really high right now, but on the other hand, so are a lot of input prices. So, you know, you still need to put a pencil to it and try to pencil it out and see if that's going to be something that you're willing to spend money on and if you can get the benefit from it. You know, it all hinges on the amount of rain we get. And, you know, if it turns off dry like it has on me several times, you know, you just kind of throw that money away. And, you know, we have been in the last few years, we've just been pulling cattle off of those pastures and letting it stockpile naturally. Now, Dr. Chris Toitsch has taught us that if you've got all your soil microbes and different things all, if everything's good there and you've got pretty high fertility anyway, you're probably going to get some stockpiling effect regardless of whether you put nitrogen on or not. So, you know, those are the things that I'm looking at to try to figure out what I'm going to do.
I think it's especially true if you had a chance to fertilize earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times when we do our spring fertilization, we're not 100% on what's going to be grazed or what's going to be baled. That's kind of going to be a game time decision, even though we have a lot of times dedicated mm-hmm. hay fields. A lot of times we have a pasture that gets enough regrowth on it that it needs to be cut and baled as well. Yep. But, you know, I'm like you, if you don't have the rain, the idea of fall fertilization for stockpiling is a moot point. Mm-hmm. You're just exactly what you said, throwing your money away. Yep. My hopes are, as dry as we were last year, if you're not looking at stockpiling fescue, that you actually have a chance to do some pasture renovation in some places. Absolutely. I'm hoping we at least have enough moisture for that to be able to go back in, drill some grass seed in, and hopefully have a little bit of regenerated growth.
Yeah, last year was tough. It was really tough. I mean, I planted some fescue orchard grass that laid there for at least 6 weeks. I can't remember if it was 6 or 8 weeks, but it laid there that long before it ever came up. And see, we were way down in November when it did come up. And then I was worried all winter long that we was going to have a hard freeze. And we did have a hard freeze in December.
Finally.
Yeah.
But we most of November was conducive to helping that late sowed seed get up and get going.
That's right. And it had just got up, I guess, got up enough where we didn't have that problem. But, you know.
Did you have any trouble with it heaving out? In, you know, because it was really a mild winter after our freeze out.
After
Christmas,
the 3 days.
Yeah, after the 3 day Christmas freeze. But, because I know that's what we worry about is those late seeded, you know, fescue or is you want that root system, you want it to be real established so that you don't lose it during that freeze and thawing process through the winter. Because, and we worry about that same thing with wheat.
Sure.
That's why we
sure.
want to get that wheat crop planted in a timely fashion so that it gets real established before we go through that. So.
And I think a lot of the fescue and orchard grass and the wheat too was all planted in a timely fashion.
It's
the fact we just didn't, I don't think we've experienced a fall that dry in a long time. Where seed will just lay there for 6 or 8 weeks before it ever comes up, period. You know, most of the time, sometimes it'll perish or something, like it'll get enough.
Right.
A lot of times it'll get enough moisture just to come up and it'll be dry again. Which is worse.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we've ever had, and I can't remember it obviously, but I mean.
You know, I tell you one of the differences though, like between our fall seeded pastures and our wheat crop, the old saying is, you know, you plant in the dust, your bins will bust. And that was the case with the wheat crop this year for sure.
Yeah.
But pastures, I saw even some places where stuff that was seeded on time and took forever to get up and going, it didn't really seem like it had the same takeoff about it this spring that it did. And I think that was because we actually had some fescue die. Well, pastures were just, and hay fields alike, were just thinner this spring than what they should have been. And that was because of the fall before.
Yeah, and I think you saw that in the yield. You know, and I had some fields that did not yield as much. And then other fields that, I had one field that made 10 or 11 rows more than it made last year. There's no rhyme or reason for that, really. I mean, it's the same fertilizer on the same ground, relatively close, you know, but I mean, it's just one of them weird deals. But the grass that I did seed last fall, it's like you said, Jay, it seemed like it just took it forever to get going, and it just sat there. And I mean, just sat there all spring. And now, finally, in the last probably month, it has really grown. And of course, it's run out of fertilizer, but I mean, you know, it's grown as much as it possibly could.
Got a hay field next to my house, my hay field, even though I don't put it up, I let a neighbor cut and bale it. I honestly think the second cutting right now is as strong as the first cutting was. Yeah. It just seems like it. Some of that stuff was little, too little to be cut, and it's kind of come back on now.
A lot of the producers that I talked to after that first cutting, most of them said it was light, it was off, and I think probably I'm like you, Jay. I think that it's gotten better over the summer. I mean, especially if you was lucky enough to pick up some rains.
I think that's the key.
Yeah.
Is we've had rains along the way, you know, and they've been different. We've had parts of our end of the state that have received too much rain in the past month. We've had about 3 8 to 10 inch rains, just depending on where they fell and who got them. I was telling a producer the other night, we were texting back and forth, I think I've caught the corner of every one of those storms. And when somebody's getting flooded out with 8 and 9 inches, I've been getting 3/4 of an inch.
Yeah.
But every little storm it's come through. Yeah. And you can tell it in my area. It's totally different than it was last year. I know, David, even though we live in the same county, we haven't been getting the same rainfalls.
No.
You've had some of those bigger rains, not quite as big as some of the bad places. But
seemed like you've been getting them more frequently, and I would just get a half inch or whatever at a time. But yeah, it's much different than it was last year. I think I started feeding hay in August last year. We were at a point this spring, I guess it was in May, that I thought, I'm fixing to have to do this again, you know.
Yeah, already. we had about a 3-week period there.
Dry, sure enough, dry. We got really dry. And so, you know, hopefully we won't have that throughout the fall. But, you know, as far as, you know, planning on doing some pasture renovation, look at those pastures that are just not producing. Number one, you need to take a soil test.
Absolutely.
I mean, you need to get the pH corrected. If there's a problem with the pH, you need to get that corrected. P and K would be right behind that, you know. A good way to get a little nitrogen for some fall fertilization and some stockpiling, Jay, is to put on phosphorus, because you're going to get a little bit of kick from that DAP. You're going to have about 18 units for every 100 pounds you put down, you know. So
about half of what the phosphorus would be.
Right. So kind of you're going to get a little kick there from that. So, I mean, if you need some P and K, you know, that would be probably a good time to do that. And you get a little added benefit from the kick from the nitrogen.
Right. And, you know, I think some of the work we've been seeing, we talked before to Dr. Chris Teutsch, and he was talking about some of the work they've been doing that very much mimics the same nitrogen recommendations that we make for lawns and turf applications, which is that pound, a pound and a half for every 1,000 square foot, or 50 units to the acre.
Right. And in pasture situation, like Dr. Teutsch was talking about, that's a later applied application. I just want to make that clear. That's not
November.
Like stockpiling. Yeah,
right,
that's
right.
November, I think around Thanksgiving.
That's what they're looking at.
And it's a short window.
Yeah, it's
that
like
you
a,
need to that, do that. Yeah.
Right. You know, just to touch on that real quick, the thought with that is that stimulates root development. And that root development that gets a little bit of carbohydrate stores up to help carry it through the winter. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't start off in a deficit in the spring. It's not behind on nutrients.
Right.
It starts off even.
Right. So if we don't have a very good stockpiling, you know, August and September, maybe you want to think about putting a little bit of that nitrogen on come around Thanksgiving or whenever that window is for your area. But that would be a great way to kind of get a little kick if you need to do that. If you're not, you know, maybe you're not in a dry lot or you're not in a bale grazing situation. And I honestly, y'all, I really recommend folks be in some kind of system like that, because you're putting those nutrients back on that pasture. That's helping your bottom line from a P and K standpoint. And that's also helping the fertility all in your pastures that you're in. If you've got a really poor pasture, that's a great way to add to the fertility in that pasture, is some type of bale grazing system. And there's none that are perfect, you know, and there's different ways to do everything. And you kind of got to figure, you know, it's kind of what when we talked about our strategic winter grazing that we used to do and used to talk about that, it's a good thing is that you can take, maybe you can just glean one thing from that program and help yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to adopt the whole program.
That's right.
You can just do one or two things that you think fit your program that'll help you out.
Some folks may not have the soil types that would allow them to do that. They may have too much moisture.
Right.
And in that time of the year that they end up doing more damage than they do good. So it's not for everybody, but I think it is for a lot of people if they just take a look at it.
Yeah, and I think in the fall is even a better time to do it because, number one, we're drier in the fall than we are in the wintertime. So if you want to heavily graze or heavily bale graze a particular section or a field that maybe has low fertility, that's a perfect time to do it.
Yeah.
And I would start doing that in probably September. That helps you pull those cows off the rest of your pastures and let those pastures rest and get some growth on them, regardless of whether you put any stockpile fertilizer on, it's still going to stockpile.
They're going to have a little bit of rejuvenation just because you're not grazing them.
Right. And then in that fall, when you have, and you're doing that, you're adding the fertility to that poor fertility field and getting all those nutrients back on there, and all the nutrients that you've harvested off of your hay fields is going right back on to your own property.
And you know, we have publications at each extension office that basically will give what you're removing, but you can also look at that same information and see what you're putting back as far as the hay that's left over and what's being scattered and all that. So
yeah, any you know, and there's a lot of different ways to do bale grazing. There's you can use the rings, you can unroll hay, and unrolling hay is a great way to do it if it's dry.
Right.
If it's not dry, it's not a very good way to do it because you've got to get out there and track up that field.
That's right.
I have a producer that unrolls his. And matter of fact, he was where the Farm City tour that I had when we went out to his farm. And he talked about that to the folks that was there. And he is, part of that is he's trying to utilize as much of that bale as he can.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And that's the way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, he's very conscious of that. And and that was one of the reasons. And then the other thing was so you're spreading the cattle out. They're not all right there at one spot. Yeah. And I think that, you know, I hadn't heard very many people doing that until I think you were the first one that I talked to, David, that did that. But, and I think, like you said, the bale grazing is another way to just be able to do that. I was trying to look up the information, but I can't find it. But how much fertilizer is in a bale of hay? We do not think about that. We've talked about that before, and I cannot remember that number, and I was trying
I've
to find
those,
it.
I've seen those rate removal charts on,
but
on
it,
what
it,
the hay is.
It's surprising, though, how much fertilizer that is in that bale that, like you said, I mean, that's a great way to improve the fertility of a field.
Well, you know, we're in a tobacco production area. It used to be a heavily tobacco production area. We used to see folks spread stalks, and it's basically the same benefit of that. That's what you're getting out of that. When I think about the bale grazing, you mentioned moisture and getting across the ground, how when you're feeding hay sometimes daily or when you're unrolling hay like that, the big benefit of the bale grazing is you can pick and choose the times when you're putting it out. You can put several bales out at once, maybe that would last you 2 weeks, and you're not having to make as many trips across the ground. Especially, you can cater and say, well, I need to go and put some extra out now because it's going to be wet next week. You can get out ahead of it and pick and choose your times.
Yeah, I think the field that we normally calve in, we bale graze that field, and I think I put out enough hay for 6 weeks is what we ended up putting out. So, that's the good thing about it is you can kind of pick and choose. The bad thing about the bale grazing, other than the moisture deal, is it's something you have to do every day. So if you're not into feeding cattle every day, that unrolling hay is not for you.
Exactly.
But the bale grazing thing, I think, is it just provides you a little more opportunity to do something that you may not have done before, and can get those nutrients back on your place. Now, there is going to be some places in your field that get really pugged up really bad, and kind of if it rains, it'll be sure enough bad. Mm-hmm. However, you know, you need to come in there in the spring and sow some annual ryegrass. I have sown a forage plantain. Fantastic results with that. This year I tried the annual Espediza, And I actually sowed some fields with the annual espadiza. The good thing about that is you sow it a little later, about a month later, than you do clover. Traditionally, we try to sow clover by the 15th of,
right.
of if we're going to frost seed it.
February.
By the, 15th of February. But this is more anywhere from about the 5th to the 15th of March. And, you know, we don't seem to be as busy maybe, and the weather's not as bad, it's not as cold and that kind of thing. But I've got a fantastic stand. I took a picture the other day and sent it to Greg Halich.
I saw it. You showed it to me.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, it's as rank as it can be. Let me preface all that by saying that I sowed it a little thicker because I was done. I had sown everything else, and I had some seed I wanted to get rid of, and so I sowed it probably a little bit thicker. But the cows are on that field right now. I did have to skip out on the first grazing as we were rotationally grazing because I just didn't feel like it was big enough.
Right.
And when we came back, it was about 10 inches tall, and the cows loved it.
You mentioned there, though, that you seeded that a little bit later than you would other things. Talk a little bit about that, because I feel like that's where maybe with Lespediza, where some folks have maybe not given it the due that it deserves, maybe that's why they've been seeding it earlier in the spring than they really needed to.
Yeah, I think for years and years, Jay, you know, the recommendation was to sow clover and Lespediza at the same time. And working from ag retail, we have mixed in lots of Lespediza with, you know, at the same time we were sowing clover and spreading fertilizer. So, you know, I think going to March, I think I sowed that on about the 8th. Now, if you're in central Kentucky or up northern Kentucky a little bit, you know, your dates are going to be about a couple of weeks behind us.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I just think it gives you another opportunity. If you were going to sow clover and it got bad, the weather got bad or got wet, and you couldn't get that done, well, you can fall back on this annual espadiza and sow that in the first, you know, like I said, I sowed that about the 8th, and you can sow that about anywhere from the 5th to the 15th. Down in our area, and I think you'll be in great shape. I really do.
You know, one of the places I've seen that really hold true to what you're saying is on a lot of the reclaimed mine land that we have in Hopkins County, some parts of North Christian County. A lot of Lespediza, and I know it's not the same plant. It's a little bit different. But when some of the folks who are grazing that, some of the folks who have been cutting some of that for hay, you don't see that Lespediza come on a lot of times until after that first round is done and gone. And that's where I've noticed it. So I've kind of always known that it was a little bit later maturing plant. Yeah. And once you were talking about when you seeded that, I really feel like that's where we've been missing the boat.
I think you're right.
Is it's probably a good month later than what we're used to seeding clover.
Yeah, and you know, it's really this whole summer weather is kind of, it likes it. It likes it hot, and it you know, kind of a little bit droughty, maybe a little more so than other times. We've got several acres that my son's farm that we're going to try to seed this next year. I'm going to do a couple of fields at his place just to see his, and it, the thing about his place is it's a lot more rolling. The ground is a lot thinner. So you would think that the Lespediza would take hold there better probably than some really fertile soils because his P and K, we've spent a lot of money trying to get it up to the – and it just doesn't hold.
Sure.
You know, and his carrying capacity is just not near what mine is. I mean, he had probably about 25 or 26 cows on 80 acres, and when it turned off dry, boy, you could tell it. And at my house, I've got, I've got 40 cows on 80 acres. So, I mean, the difference in soil types is surely you can really tell it there as much as anything. And then when it turns dry, boy, it doesn't take it long to dry up.
Once again, going back to that plant being heavily utilized on reclamation projects, that's exactly the type of ground that it's going into. Dry, hard, heavy clay. Most of the topsoil was taken off and, you know, when you see those mine spoils, those soil banks over there, that's what that was. That was the topsoil that came off of that property. So,
oh, absolutely.
Probably the best soil that was there is over in a clump growing pine trees right now.
Right. And, you know, and I think Greg Halich has got a lot of YouTube videos.
I think so, too.
And I'm sure you can get on Plant Soil Science website and find all those. But I mean, he's got a lot of YouTube videos that talk about bale grazing if somebody's interested in that.
And we have a podcast also on bale grazing with him. And so you can go back and search our podcast and be able to listen to that. And Greg's going to have a lot more information coming out too, because he's working with some producers, and there's some producers that's been identified to be part of a research project across the state. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a long term, when I say long term, you know, three to five years, you know, like, that we're going to be working and tying in some soil testing with that, and then being able to kind of track that information and look and really start to see the benefits of bale grazing and how that is impacting the soil fertility. And he really enjoys this type of work. And there's a lot of folks out there that are interested in trying this, you know, and I think that that's just going to get, more popular if it is something that you can do with your situation. Like, well, you said, some people it's just not going to work because of their work schedule.
And we got to think outside the box.
Sure.
This is why we're doing what we're doing. We're trying to think outside the box a little bit to do something a little bit different than what we've been doing in the past, and because the inputs costs are so high.
Right. Yeah. We got to find a way to work around them.
Yeah.
Anybody that's interested in listening to the show that Vicki mentioned, Dr. Halich's original show, that would be episode 6. If they want to dial all the way back through our shows, if you hadn't listened to some of the ones in the past, go back and listen to some of those. We did some really good stuff in those days. But February the 24th of 2022, look for that date, and it's episode 6. Bale grazing with Greg Halich. I think it would be a worthwhile to go back and listen to that maybe before you started asking some of these questions and got involved with it.
Because he'll answer a lot of them in that podcast. But you know, Greg is always willing to talk with folks. So if you need to, you know, give him a call.
And he loves to do farm visits too. Yeah.
You know, the good thing about Greg is that he's actually doing this same stuff on his own place.
Putting it to practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and kind of like having a little bit of skin in the game, you know, it really helps for folks to, it's hard to tell somebody about something if you're not going to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. And he takes that to heart and does a fantastic job. They've got a finished beef
and he did that deal for a few years before he started doing.
Right, before he started talking about it
and doing presentations about that too. So it is something that,
I think they do stocker calves, and then they got like a finished beef operation too. So he
forage finished beef.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. So
and he does some really good work on just stretching that dollar, you know, in hay. And so I am going to circle back. We talked about that circling back at the beginning. So I did find the information. And according to the University of Kentucky, one ton of hay contains approximately 35 pounds of nitrogen, 12 pounds of P2O5, and 55 pounds of K2O. So, and that translated to about $72 a ton when I wrote this about a year ago or something like that. So there is fertility in that bale.
There's value
in that bale, and being able to capture some of that value is going to be a positive thing.
Hearing you say that, I'm pretty sure when we recorded our show with Chris Teutsch fairly early on, he may have quoted those same numbers at the time.
So I think that's substantial.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, a lot of the topics we talk about on this show are pertinent to that time of the year, but when you think about some of our other forage related shows, even shows that we did back when we first started this almost 2 years ago now, they're timeless. You can go back and listen to those, and they're going to apply year after year after year. Even though we keep talking about some of these things, we still have the same issues over and over and always will with something.
And I think we learn too. I mean, so we did bale grazing back in February of 2022. In that amount of time, look at how much more information is out there. Look at how much, even Greg's research, how much more we've learned, and being able to come back and revisit those topics, is important. It's not going to be the exact same episode because we've learned a lot.
Vicki, you've been in contact with Greg about getting him set up to do another show.
Yes, we're hoping in October.
I look forward to doing that, to having updated information from shows we've done in the past.
Yeah.
And oh, absolutely.
Yeah, hopefully in October we're going to be able to get him back on, and he's wanting to do some farm visits down this way, and so hopefully we'll get to spend some time with him and share some of what we're seeing maybe in those farm visits when he comes on the podcast too.
Oh, absolutely. And he and I actually talked to him this week. He called me after I sent him that picture. He actually called, and he and I had a good visit about, you know, what I was doing and you know, how I did it and my seeding rates and all this. You know, he was very interested in. So I think as far as, you know, collecting data, Greg is very interested in doing that because, you know, he's interested in folks doing well with this project. And, you know, I think there's some opportunity for folks to do good if they want to take advantage of that.
And as an ag economist, he likes to do it as economical as he can.
Yeah.
and he wants you to do that too.
Well, that's right. I was kind of skeptical about the whole annual Espedeza deal when he started talking about it. And, I mean, it was real interesting, and I was really interested. And so I talked to him more about it, and then, you know, so I finally just bit the bullet and did it. And, you know, he's right. I mean, it works now. I mean, I've got Stan, and the field that I have this on is probably the lowest fertility in our whole farm, just because that's where we keep the bulls for the most part. I graze it through the summer, and then we pull bulls, you know, I put them in there. So, you know, we probably don't ever put any fertilizer on there. Haven't probably put any in probably 7 or 8 years. And so we bale grazed that last fall and then came in there and sowed, I drilled annual ryegrass on that and then came in there with the annual Espediza as well. So, I mean, it did pretty good. I will say that the annual Espediza did not do as good. And the annual ryegrass did not do as good, but the Espediza did really well everywhere except where it was pugged out really bad. Mm-hmm. And we had some heavy, heavy rains when they were in there, and I don't know why it didn't do very good there, but it didn't. But the rest of the field, you can't tell it.
Could be a compaction issue.
Could be, yeah. So, but the rest of the field and where the bale was sitting, there's Espediza, mm-hmm. but just not in those pugged up places. But, you know, I found that the forage plantain is a great accompaniment to all of those. It comes up really, really good, and you'll have that. I think what I sowed the last time is 2 years old now, and still have great forage production from that. So that's something that we don't talk about much, and folks really need to look at that. It's a good forage.
It's a plant that I'm not that familiar with, honestly. Just hadn't had any personal experience with it.
Right. I ended up getting the seed from Greg. I had to call Greg, and he told me there was a place in Iowa that you could get the seed. So I got I don't know, 25 pounds. It's kind of like clover. It goes a long way. But I'm not kidding. I don't know as I wouldn't put that in my mix if I was putting a forage mix in. I don't know as I wouldn't put that forage plantain in because it does provide a lot of great forage. For sure.
Awesome. And, you know, that's the name of the game. We've had Kentucky 31 fescue for a lot of years. If it wasn't for Kentucky 31, most of this state would be in New Orleans right now. It would have done washed away. But on that same hand, we have a lot of tools in the toolbox that we can go back in and look at, especially when we're thinking outside the box, as you put it, of that traditional grazing system. When we break our areas down and say, okay, this is where I'm going to bale graze. Yeah. This is where I'm going to stockpile fescue. This is going to be my emergency grazing if I need to. This is where I plan on cutting hay. If you actually lay yourself out a forage plan, I remember taking a class when I was working on my master's at Murray State. That was the final exam for the advanced forages class, was to everybody just drew an envelope with a different list of resources, and you had to make yourself a grazing plan based upon whatever the resources were in there. Mm-hmm. And that is so true to real life because we don't all have the same resources. Yeah. We, you know, different people have different amounts of financial resources to put in something, but none of us have the same soils. All of us have a little bit different topography. Mm-hmm. There's something different that needs to cause us to look outside the box at some of these other forage opportunities.
Right. And I just want to, it's not a warning for folks that want to do bale grazing, but you need to understand that you're going to have to plant something where those bales were.
Sure.
You know, and I don't, it doesn't, it can be annual ryegrass, it can be the forage plantain, it could be the, you know, the annual espadiza, but you will have to plant something there. And I think you will be glad that you did, or clover or something like that. But I think if you do the bale grazing and then you, you know, you come back in there and renovate those spots, I think you'll be much happier with the bale grazing than if you had not.
And two, if you're thinking about doing that, just like anything else that's new that you're thinking about implementing on your farm, kind of start small. Don't try to jump out there and try to do too much. I know I've heard Greg speak on this more than once, and that's one of the things that he always says is don't try to do
too much. Fall grazing is a great time to do that because it's drier.
Right.
You know, and you don't have to think about so far ahead about setting out bales. That's the reason I set out bales that far ahead, is because in the winter time like that, the weather is so unpredictable and you don't know. So when I catch a weekend that it's dry, I'm going to go out and set out, you know, 4 or 5 weeks worth of hay rolls. And, you know, and like Jay said, you know, last fall was not a good stockpiling year. Normally I try to have enough hay, you know, and grass for 7 days. Well, it didn't hardly catch it this winter, and that's because the last fall was so dry.
Sure.
I mean, you know, so you have to be able to turn and pivot and do something different if you need to. So just remember that, don't get into something that you're not flexible, that you can't be flexible.
Right.
You know, try to be in something that you can be flexible. If you needed to go back to the dry lot, you could do that. Or if you needed to set out another bale or two, that you could do that. Those kind of things. Be flexible.
You know, that's the best thing about a forage plan, is you can plan in there where you need to be flexible and where not. If we do things the same way we've always done them, then we're the ones having to be flexible to meet the conditions that we have. An advanced forage plan might give folks the ability to look outside that and do something that might, you know, it might just be necessarily wouldn't necessarily make them more money, but it might be more efficient use of the resources that they have. It might give them a little more time to dedicate to other things. And that's where you're making it up.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So
if somebody's thinking about stockpiling fescue, like we kind of talked about that in the beginning there, in that window that you're needing to put that nitrogen on, David, is it, I mean, it's the 1st of August, is that?
It's about 15th.
Okay, yeah, so right.
15th through, I try to have everything done, if I'm going to do anything, by the 15th of September.
Yeah.
I don't want to go past that.
You've got about nitrogen. A 30-day window there, starting at the middle of August, and basically, if you're looking at renovating pastures, that's about the same window.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're looking at renovating pastures, the idea is that you want, ideally, 3 to maybe even 4 weeks of growth on that new plant before we get our first frost. In our end of Kentucky, that's going to be towards the end of the third week in October, anywhere from the 18th, 19th, 20th, somewhere in there.
And don't try to stockpile fields that you're trying to renovate.
Right.
That's
two different projects.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to stockpile that field the next year, that's great. That'd be a good idea. But don't try to put nitrogen on a field that you've just planted fescue or orchard grass in, because you're not going to be pleased with the results, for sure.
Right. Certainly not going to get the benefit of all that you just reseeded.
Absolutely.
And when is that time period that it needs to be done by then, or forget it?
September 15th.
So that nitrogen application and all. Yeah.
Yep.
So I think that's important to
In the far southwestern end of the state, the renovation period may last a week longer than that.
Yeah.
But if you're going to stockpile, you need to have all that done by the middle.
And I don't know, as I don't cut my nitrogen rates back the closer I get to 15th.
Sure. Sure. You know, well, you're not going to get the bang benefit for your buck.
Right. Exactly. You know, you're putting on 50 units or whatever, 15th of August, by the 10th or so of September, I may be cutting back to 40.
Yeah. 35 or 40. I was thinking 35, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
35 or 40, yeah.
The later in that window, the less you need to be putting because yep. it's just not going right. to, the plant's not physically able to take it up and, right. and utilize
and you
it.
And you've just thrown that away, right. the money, you just thrown that money away.
Right.
Or chicken litter. Chicken litter would be great. Two yes. tons of chicken litter.
That's true.
Be great.
You know, start with a soil test. If you yeah. don't need that extra P and K, chicken litter might not be the best thing. But in our pasture situations, I think most of our pastures yep. are going to get the benefit of that.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Bill's organic matter for sure.
Let's definitely. Switch gears here for just a little bit. I'm not sure how much time we have left, but...
We'll keep on going. You know, nobody's yeah, going to tell us to quit.
That's true. But, you know, well, y'all might tell me to shut up, I guess. But just for a minute, of course, we've been talking about getting ready for fall. One of those things you got to think about is if you... are one of those that put in some summer annuals to get through the summer because we had that drought. We've talked Definitely. About our pastures being less hay and you know just from the effects of the drought. If those summer annuals was an option for you that you opted to do, you got to have a plan for killing that out and have a plan for what you're going to put back in there and getting something seeded. Hopefully you've got enough moisture this year to be able to go in there and seed something. So just keep that in mind. I don't know, David, if you got some other
things to say. I would graze the fire out of that, whatever it is. Whatever summer annual you've got, I'd graze that into the ground by the 15th or 20th of August. Mm-hmm. And then I would come in there and terminate that crop so that you have an opportunity because some of those summer annuals are a little bit tougher to kill and you may have to come in there with a second shot of Roundup or something.
Right.
It just depends. But, you know, the problem is like if you have sorghum sedan grass and it doesn't kill it all and you've planted fescue and orchard grass in that and then we get a frost. Mm. You know, that's
then
not,
you're going to have some toxicity problems.
Right, mm-hmm. And then you've got a problem. So
I'm glad you touched on that because I was fixing to. I'm working on a project with a producer right now where he had wheat that he cut as a forage back in the spring. He's going to go in this fall, hopefully, if we have enough moisture, do a total renovation and go in and with a pure stand of orchard grass. Mm-hmm. But he wanted something to put on that in the summertime just to make some baling out of. He does not graze any, doesn't own a cow. We went with a sorghum sedan type cross,
yep.
And the idea is that he hopes to get two cuttings off of it, and then we're going to kill it. Mm-hmm. And I actually said the same thing to him just this week, David. He needed to go ahead and think about spraying that. I told him anytime after the first week of August because he may be looking at 2 weeks mm-hmm. or two applications to get it killed.
Yep. Yep.
But that he said, well, he said, it's an annual. Can't I just let it die out?
Mm-mm.
And I said, if you're not probably not going to cut any hay off that this fall anyway. But I said, with the potential for any toxicity problems, I right. said, I'd want that dead and gone before I seeded anything back into it.
But, you know, from a hay perspective, if he's not going to have any cows grazing, if he had some escapes, it wouldn't be as bad if somebody that was trying
it's
to
grazing.
Graze it.
That's right. exactly right.
So, you know, that. I think that's a good plan. I mean, I really do, but I would cut her as short as I could cut her the last time I was going to cut it and then let it grow back for a week or so because in a week, as y'all know, sorghum sedan grass mm-hmm. will jump up 5 or 6 inches. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, I'd terminate that at that time.
And he told me the first this week to go. I went and looked at it 2 weeks ago, and it was barely up. He called me the first this week. He said, go look at it. It'd be ready to cut for a long
And from a spraying application, that'd be good to have that regrow because it's actively growing. When it's actively growing, it's actively
yes,
taking up
that's
that.
That's
it's
the best.
Actively taking up that herbicide yeah. too.
Good point.
To not, get a better kill because yeah. you've got to, you know you got to have something there to
and
take
not,
up.
Not when it's stressed. You know, a lot of times in August we have some drier August.
Right.
You want to make sure that crop is growing like it's supposed to be when you try to terminate it. If it's stressed or, you know, we've got, if it's dry, you know, those are the times that mm-hmm. you're going to get some escapes that you normally wouldn't have otherwise.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's correct.
You know, that gets us to the point we always like to wrap things up with a timely tip. And with all we've talked about today, I think I'll reiterate it one more time. Evaluate your pastures now to determine your potential for winter grazing sites and or bale grazing sites. now's the time to be putting that forage plan together so that you've got it ready so that you can put it into place come the middle of August.
That's right.
Oh, absolutely. And now's the time to get your plan together, not this fall or not this winter.
Not yeah. not August the 15th.
You need it this fall. Right. You need to be putting your plan together now.
That's right. Yeah. So that's good advice, Jay. For sure.
Yeah. Sounds good. Well, we want to say thanks to our host for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.